a judge, which violates even Egypt's own penal code. You have another journalist called Ismail Iskandarani who just arrived back. He knew that he was in danger if he was going to go back to Egypt, but he had to see his sick mother. He was taken at the airport and is in prison now. So this is the situation that we're living in.
Well, Sharif, I want you to be very careful when you go back home to Cairo. Sharif Abdelkaddous, Democracy Now! Correspondent, fellow at The Nation. His recent piece is for the Global Post, and we'll link to it. It's called, With U.S. Help, Saudi Arabia is Obliterating Yemen. It's first of a two-part series on Yemen. And that does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio and Heartbeat Silent Sound Systems proudly presents Silent Nights 2015, a silent disco and silent auction benefit for KBOO. December 19th, 8 p.m. at Manifestation PDX. This very special silent disco features talented KBOO DJs and MCs. You'll have three channels of danceable jams to choose from, including bluegrass, the Grateful Dead, reggae, afrobeat, world music, hip-hop, funk and soul, electronic dance music, bhangra, and global bass music. There's something for everyone. We'll also feature a silent auction with art from local artists as well. Silent Nights will be on Saturday, December 19th, from 8 p.m. to midnight at Manifestation PDX, 2020 Southeast Bush Street in Portland. For more information on the lineup and tickets and more, go to kboo.fm/silentnights2015. That's Silent Nights 2015, a benefit for our community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Thank you to all of our new and renewing members during our winter membership drive. That makes KBOO one of the best community radio stations in the country. We fell a few thousand short of our goal of 55,000, so if you didn't have a chance to give, it's never too late. Remember, for the month of December, if you become a new member, or if you increase your giving over last year, your gift will be matched by a number of local businesses and individual donors. Donate now at kboo.fm/give. Thank you once again for being the best supporters a station could ever ask for.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland City Council considers an increase in parking meter rates as a means to free up city parking and vehicle congestion.
A Virginia school district cancels classes amid parent complaints over a calligraphy homework assignment.
And a Baker City man was indicted by federal authorities yesterday after a homemade bomb was found in his storage shed.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 18th, 2015. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. After 17 straight days of rain, Western Oregon is bracing for even more. Flood warnings have been issued for parts of Multnomah and Clackamas counties. Cities along the coast, such as Newport, have been hit with mudslides and road closures. Rain is in the forecast for the Portland area every day for the next 7 days.
Raw sewage has been reported flowing into the Willamette and Clackamas rivers. Kellogg Lake contamination is also reported in warnings from the City of Gladstone and the Oak Lodge Sanitary District. The sewage overflow at River Forest Road continued last night into the morning, and sewage bypassed the pump station on Southeast Park Street for over 5 hours Thursday night. At about 7:40 this morning, Manholes at Anspach Street overflowed, and the city of Gladstone warned of overflow near West Clackamas Boulevard at the south end of Portland Avenue. These public health issues are part of a regional situation also affecting the Portland Bureau of Environmental Services. Monday on the KBOO News, we heard from a resident of Southwest Portland who's been working for years to get the city to change its approach to sewage flows and pumping near Fano Creek along Southwest Shattuck Road. Residents and visitors are advised to use caution, avoid posted areas, and keep neighbors informed.
Oregon households that need food assistance are now more likely to be low-wage workers than unemployed or to be people over 65 years old. They're also more likely to need assistance regularly. Those are some of the findings of Oregon's Food Bank's new Hunger Factor survey of food recipients across the state. Charles Johnson of KBOO News, in conjunction with the Oregon News Service, has more.
One in five Oregonians faces a new year in which he or she will rely on food from a food pantry or soup kitchen. This week, Oregon Food Bank released the results of a survey of people who receive food assistance. One important finding is that 36% of food recipients said they visit their local food pantry regularly, at least 12 times a year. That's up 5 percentage points from just a few years ago. However, Oregon Food Bank CEO Susanna Morgan says that it's good news that the survey found more people are working. They're just not making enough money.
Compared to 2012, the folks who are accessing food assistance who are also actively seeking work fall into that unemployed category has gone down. So in 2012, it was 23% of the people we served, and in 2015, it was 16%.
Another trend this year compared to 2012, more people over age 65 are food bank clients. One-third of those surveyed said food bank assistance has made the difference in being able to pay a utility bill. Almost as many cited high housing costs as a factor in their inability to make ends meet. Morgan also attended the Oregon Leadership Summit this week and cited one speaker's comment that Oregon is a job creation machine.
And this gives me real hope for the future in thinking that we have the possibility of creating those jobs, those family wage jobs. But he also said there has not been much movement on poverty.
28% of those surveyed said they often worry or always worry about where their next meal is coming from. Morgan says a combination of low earnings and high debt lands people who never thought they'd be in this situation at their local food pantry. The source of the debt for 39% of those surveyed was medical bills. For KBOO News, I'm Charles Johnson.
Yesterday, the Portland City Council approved a measure directing all city bureaus to convert existing single-user gender-specific restrooms into all-user restrooms within 6 months. Also, the resolution called on the city to develop a plan to increase the number of all-user restrooms citywide and to implement gender-neutral policies. One of the people who testified was Deborah Kafuri, Multnomah County Chair.
This is exactly the type of forward-looking leadership residents have come to expect from their local government. In Multnomah County and in the city of Portland, we are committed to equity and policies that eliminate discrimination. Domestic partner benefits and trans-inclusive healthcare are just two examples of our jurisdictions leading on equity and inclusivity for our LGBT community. When Multnomah County began creating all-user restrooms in 2013, we did so because we learned that we had employees who were leaving their office buildings on break to use public restrooms and other facilities. This was unacceptable. Since 2013, we have converted 141 gender-specific restrooms to all-user, and we have 44 buildings where all-user restrooms are available to the public. Where we don't have single-stall facilities, we are creating them. All of these steps will make sure that our employees who are transgender and any visitor to our county buildings who is transgender will not have to worry about this most basic human need. And I appreciate that the city is doing the same. Even though this may seem like a small action, it helps build a more just world, not only for our metro area residents who will directly benefit, but for all Oregonians. Today, there is a transgender young person somewhere in our state who will see this on the news and will feel understood and supported by your actions. Additionally, we are starting to see gender identity discrimination campaigns in other parts of the country. And if these discriminatory campaigns make their way to our community, we will be able to voice our own experience in creating all-user restrooms and help dispel the myths and the fears. I congratulate you today for taking this step forward, and I'm here to offer my support and assistance in any way that is helpful.
The city unanimously approved the gender-neutral restroom ordinance. It'll go into effect in the next 6 months.
Portland street parking rates may go up 20% next year if the Transportation Bureau has its way. The Portland City Council will vote in 2 weeks on whether to increase parking meter rates from $1.60 an hour to $2 an hour, effective January 29th, according to the Oregonian. The increase is projected to free up street parking and ease traffic congestion in downtown Portland. Some advocates push the city to raise the rate even more, arguing that street parking shouldn't be cheaper than the $2.50 charged for bus and light rail fare. Others express concern about the impact the increase will have on low-wage workers downtown. For now, though, the Portland Transportation Bureau says charging only $2 will be enough to free spaces. If approved, the increase is expected to generate $4 million in annual revenue.
An event organized by Know Your City this week in Portland focused on the issues of sweeps of houseless encampments by the City of Portland and others. KBOO's Kristen Yount was there. She brings us this report.
This is Kristen Yount for KBOO News. I was in attendance at the emergency housing panel at the Community Warehouse on Wednesday, December 16th. Panelists included Katrina Holland from the Community Alliance of Tenants, Margot Black from the Portland Tenants Union, Vahid Brown from Hazelnut Grove, Josh Alpert, Mayor Charlie Hales' Chief of Staff, and Meg Guerrera of Hacienda CDC. When asked what the police role in policing the houseless in Portland was, Hales' Chief of Staff, Josh Alpert, had this to say.
Let me unpack it a little bit. The last week, in the middle of the deluge, the storms that we had, we were getting phone calls from folks on the street asking why the city was out there sweeping people. And I said, "But absolutely, we're not doing that. Why would we be doing that?" And so I asked the police chief, "Are we out there sweeping people?" He said, "No. Why would we be doing that?" Turns out we were doing that. And that immediately prompted us to issue a directive to all city bureaus saying, okay, for the moment, two things. One, when there is bad weather, and we all know what bad weather is here, do nothing. Leave people alone. They are fighting to keep their possessions dry and themselves dry. It makes no sense. Why would we be doing that? And then number two, for the time being, every request for a sweep must come through our office. You must first get our approval before doing it. And it wasn't so that we could control anything. It was so that we could collect information, because I can't begin to tell you how complicated we have made this whole process. And I spent time over the weekend really going through, and I was getting, 10 to 15 requests a day from just one bureau at the city saying, okay, we've gotten complaints here, 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 and here. I took it over the weekend and went through it all and talked to the mayor on Monday morning and said, I think I have a better way here. And so I just got the feedback I needed from our attorneys today and shot it over to the police to say, okay, here is the new system, give me your comments now. And then tomorrow I share it with my colleagues in City Hall and then all the bureau directors. And what we're going to end up doing is standardizing the system throughout the city so that everyone, both city employees and people living on the street, at least know what criteria is being used when these things happen. And I'm not going to say that we're going to stop all sweeps, because we're not. There are completely appropriate uses of that mechanism, but they will be very clear, and it will be a pretty significant shift, because what we've been doing has been at the whim of whatever particular bureau is the landowner that people are camping on. And what we are now going to be instituting is a policy that says, unless there is an absolute need and there are criteria about what that actually means, then we should be out there cleaning things up. We should help people clean up the litter around their campsites. And that's it. And the mayor has been saying ad nauseum now, until we can complete the sentence, you can't stay here, but we should just leave people where they are. And if they are safe, great.
Now responding to Alpert is organizer Vahid Brown of Hazelnut Grove.
Yeah, I just wanted to briefly address the issue of sweeps. I mean, this is a great moving of the needle forward for the houseless community, the policy that Josh is talking about, that's going to reduce sweeps citywide, and that's positive. One of the greatest barriers to getting into housing for houseless people is lack of documentation, and one of the primary reasons people don't have their paperwork, they don't have their ID or their birth certificate or their social security card is because they've been through a sweep. And people who have been houseless in Portland have been through sweeps many, 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 many times. The community that I work with, they've been through dozens of sweeps at minimum. Some of them have been through every other day sweeps for months, right? So that means every time, every other day, you lose everything you have and you have to start from scratch. You don't have a tent, you don't have a jacket, you don't have the boots that you lost in the sweep, you don't have any documents. These are sweeps that are distributed in this vastly confusing tapestry of law enforcement agencies from Multnomah County sheriffs to city police to private security that are hired by Clean and Safe and the Portland Business Alliance downtown to the railroad police that has its own police department. As Josh said, when they wanted to say we're not doing sweeps, and then to find out that there's sweeps happening at multiple sites every single day all over the city, and they have a vastly a cascading negative impact, not just on the individual houseless people, but on the entire system. Because if you lose your documents and you lose your stuff, you have to throw yourself on the social service community and say, I don't have anything, I need all of the things. And I need you, first of all, to help me to get a documentation. That's going to cost money. So now if I had any pocket money, it's gone because I need to get my birth certificate replaced. So now TPI, Central City Concern, Join, Home Forward, everybody is now having to do more work and have a hugely inflated workload. So the houseless community is growing because of the rent crisis and because of the housing crisis. And because of that, they're teeming in places where they're being more and more often subject to sweeps. And that's making the problem worse and worse and worse, right? So it's just like this feedback loop, this negative feedback loop. So this is a great place to sort of interrupt the feedback loop, to stop sweeping and start, when people are congregating outside, to have them in sort of organized areas where they're not going to be subject to sweep. They have some predictability about, if you can't imagine the level of anxiety and just mental health that's, if you don't know whether the police are going to come around in the morning and take your tent from you. I mean, it's life-threatening. This sweeps kill people. 56 people died last year that we know of, that we were counted on the streets. And, many more died in emergency rooms that aren't counted in that count. That, a lot of that is because of sweeps.
That was an excerpt from the Housing Emergency Panel recorded on December 16th at the Community Warehouse. First, you heard Mayor Charles Hale's Chief of Staff, Josh Alpert, and then you heard Vahid Brown responding to the city's new policy on sweeps. For KBOO News, I'm Kristen Yao.
The Portland Aquarium is closing its doors next year. The aquarium, located on Highway 99 outside of Milwaukee, announced that it will close its operation on February 16th and search for a new location. The building currently housing the aquarium has been sold and is set for demolition in early 2016. Owners said the animals will be rehomed in aquariums across the country. A date or area for a new location has not yet been determined, though owners are considering local malls as a viable target. Visitors are encouraged to take these last few weeks to visit, touch, and feed the thousands of animals before they are rehomed. The troubled aquarium has endured controversy in the past, including its co-owner confessing to plotting to illegally buy fish. In addition, a 2013 investigation by the Oregon Humane Society found that a former employee kept a, quote, death log, end quote, documenting more than 200 animal deaths in a three-month period earlier that year.
Oregon Senate President Peter Courtney pleaded with his fellow legislators earlier this week to work to avoid what he called the most bloody political day in our history. Courtney was referring to Election Day 2016. He proposed ballot measures on taxes and the minimum wage that he says could divide the state for years to come. The Oregonian reported that the Salem Democrat told fellow legislators at the Oregon Leadership Conference on Monday that Oregon was on the verge of its own civil war and compared the upcoming ballot fights to the civil war battle at Antietam. Fights in 2010 over wages and taxes were contentious, leading to one of the most expensive ballot campaigns the state ever saw. Sponsors say the measures are needed because Oregon has the nation's lowest corporate tax and schools need the funding.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Bread and Roses. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a 50% chance of showers throughout the day and a high temperature of around 43. For tomorrow evening, there's an 80% chance of rain with an overnight low of 30 degrees. Today in history, in 1957, the first commercial nuclear power plant began operate in Shippingport, Pennsylvania, providing the first large-scale civilian atomic power plant generating electricity for consumers in the Pittsburgh area. The quote of the day is from Mizra Tahir Ahmad, quote, "Swords can win territories, but not hearts. Forces can bend heads, but not minds," end quote.
It's 5:21. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Hey, kids. You don't want to be a fatso, but that doesn't mean you have to cut back on colas, cake, and candy. Scarf down all you want and burn off those sweets with exercise. The sugary calories packed in Cokes and Twinkies don't cause childhood obesity. Lazy children do. This is the diabolical message being pushed by brand-name junk food giants. Well, not pushed in their own names, but in the names of health education organizations that target elementary school classrooms with instructional materials centered around two propagandistic themes. One, there are no good foods or bad foods. And two, the key to staying fit is not calories, but exercise. In fact, these groups are industry fronts connected by a sort of junk food mothership called Health Weight Commitment Foundation. HWCF gets a fat bankroll of about $10 million a year from the likes of Coca-Cola, Hershey, Kellogg, Nestle, and PepsiCo to distribute lesson plans promoting the corporate message that junk food is good food, as long as children exercise responsibly. This blatant proselytization is run through such supposedly sober national organizations as PTA, Girl Scouts, and Head Start. The foundation brags that some 30 million kiddos, pre-K through 5th grade, have already been immersed in its program of industry hokum. Typical of the absurd facts it imparts to elementary school children is that eating a chocolate chip cookie gives you no more calories than eating 21 carrots. Yes, 21! So have a cookie, kids, then balance it off by chomping down like Bugs Bunny on a couple of bags of carrots. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's one thing for junk food hypesters to pump out such nonsensical junk, but why are the PTA, Girl Scouts, and others swallowing it? Send them a message at Center for Science and the Public Interest. That's CSPINET.org.
J.P. Morgan Chase & Company admitted today to a conflict of interest when their executives were encouraged to steer investors to, quote, in-house hedge funds as a way to generate fees. The lion's share of the $307 million settlement will go to the Securities and Exchange Commission. $40 million of that will be forwarded to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The total settlement accounts for roughly 1% of the company's annual operating profits. There's no word yet as to whether or not this settlement will have any impact on the deferred prosecution agreements the bank signed with the U.S. Department of Justice in 2014.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hillary Clinton has dominated when it comes to labor union endorsements in the 2016 presidential primary. She has racked up backing from AFSCME, SEIU, the American Federation of Teachers, the National Education Association, North America's Building Trades, and the Machinists Union, among others. But on Thursday, the Communications Workers of America decided to back Senator Bernie Sanders. The CWA's Candace Johnson says that CWA members prefer Sanders because he's a candidate they think will break away from politics as usual and fight for working people.
Our members are proud to stand with a candidate like Bernie Sanders, who takes on corporate greed, who's fighting back, standing up against the big banks, who is taking on the flood of money in politics that's just really destroying the political system and the value of working people's votes. When a few billionaires can control our political process, something's wrong. The whole idea of a new day, a new agenda for our politics and for our economy has really caught on and caught fire, not just among CWA members, not just among union members, but among working families across the country.
Sanders is also backed by the American Postal Workers Union and National Nurses United. The Chicago Teachers Union this week voted to authorize a strike. 96% of those voting said yes to strike authorization. The union says its members don't want to strike, but they will if necessary to protect schools from cuts and layoffs. The Chicago Teachers Union urged Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the Chicago School Board to listen to what the teachers are trying to tell them. Don't cut schools anymore, don't lay off thousands of teachers, and instead improve the schools for students throughout Chicago. The American Postal Workers Union delivered more than 150,000 petition signatures to the Postmaster General supporting postal banking. The union supports the post office offering basic banking services to communities it serves. The APWU says that postal banking could provide universal banking services to underserved communities while strengthening the postal service and protecting good jobs those communities need.
Workers Independent News is heard daily on The Rick Smith Show, live 3 to 6 p.m. coast to coast at therickssmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Let's get America working. We must build, maintain, and repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Teamsters support a bipartisan approach to creating good jobs for American workers. Learn more at letsgetamericaworking.com. Teamsters strong, America stronger.
WIN is made possible in part through underwriting support from the National Association of Letter Carriers.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The death of a white Mississippi teenager doused with gasoline and set ablaze a year ago has taken on racial overtones with the FBI's arrest of 17 black men on various charges. The charges, ranging from child endangerment and possession of stolen firearms, narcotic sales, to possession of counterfeit currency, do not include a charge of murder in the death of a 19-year-old Jessica Chambers. The FBI says they specifically targeted members of the Black Gangsters Disciples, Vice Lords, and Sip Mod street gangs in the hope it would squeeze out further information on the crime. But none of the young black men arrested have been found to have anything at all to do with that crime. Critics argue that the police are using the murder of the young white woman as an excuse to target black youth in the town.
The Baker City Herald reports that a Baker City man was indicted by federal authorities yesterday after a homemade bomb was found in his storage shed. 35-year-old Jonathan Romine faces charges of unlawful possession of an explosive device and unlawful manufacturing of an explosive device. District Attorney Matt Shirtcliffe said authorities were called to Romine's neighborhood after he was reported running shirtless, yelling about his affiliation with the Islamic State and how people were going to die. Mr. Romine was arrested earlier this month on charges of possession of meth and for violating his probation. A host of federal agencies, including Homeland Security, the FBI, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, are now part of the case.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, Afghan authorities have seized and destroyed 2 tons of explosives in Kabul Wednesday, thwarting dozens of potential bomb attacks after a recent spate of deadly Taliban raids. The Islamic State group has launched an FM radio channel in eastern Afghanistan's Nangarhar province. Its broadcasts are aimed at convincing the local population that their current system is un-Islamic. And it was recently revealed that in an incident on May 31, 2012, 3 Navy SEALs, along with an Afghan local police unit, reportedly, beat more than half a dozen Afghan detainees during an interrogation. The beatings were serious enough that one local died from his injuries later in the day. After the beating, despite sworn testimony from 4 U.S. soldiers on the scene and Afghan witnesses, the case was cleared in a closed court that is routinely used for minor disciplinary infractions. Since the case, the Navy SEALs involved in the incident have faced no repercussions and 2 have been promoted. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Merrill, Charles Johnson, Kristen Yount, Demi Helenis, Robin Ryan, and Martin Dodge. The producer is David Kesters. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg.